Hello everyone, I'm Gary Elwood with ProQuest Technologies. Welcome to today's call. Now I know John's got a lot of great information to cover with you here today, so I'm very quickly going to go ahead and turn it over to you, John. Take it away.
Thank you, Gary. Hi everyone, welcome to today's call. We're talking about our business plan for the coming year, a simple, straightforward, effective business plan. And we will finish up our material on this subject today, but first I want to do a little bit of a review. So with our business plan, the most important section are our goals. And so if you haven't done so already, go back and listen to that first call that we did on business planning here in November on goals and really drill down on that, because the rest of the business plan is going to be anchored in those goals. Now, the second most important piece of our business plan is our source of business spreadsheet, meaning the sources of business that we had here in the present year. Where did our business come from? And we're going to use that source of business spreadsheet in three ways. The first is it's going to tell us whether or not we're getting an ROI, a return on investment, in with our present lead generation strategy. The second thing that it's going to do is going to serve as a blueprint for our new year ahead. In other words, if we implement the same strategies in the same way, the statistical probability is such that we'll probably do the same amount of business from the same areas. So we can use it as a blueprint for the coming year. And then it also tells us what's working, and you know, whatever's working, the question that we need to ask is, can we get it on steroids, right? If something's working well, let's see if we can turn up the volume. So where we left off last coaching session was with step five, and I'm just going to go through the first three bullet points of step five real quickly here to set the stage for the material ahead. So with our lead generation plan, which is the step five of our business plan, we need to quantify and interpolate. What that means in a nutshell and way of review is that we need to boil down our goal to transaction sides, buyer side transactions, seller side transactions, and then we need to determine where that business is going to come from. In other words, we need to interpolate based on our source of business spreadsheet. We need to figure out where each and every transaction is going to come from, and then our goal is to bridge any gap between where we landed this year and where we want to be next year. Well, how are we going to bridge that gap? Well, there's a couple of ways. The first way is the one that we already mentioned, is whatever's working, can we amp it up? Can we get it on steroids? Can we make maybe a 20% improvement in our referral and repeat strategy? Can we make a quantum leap with our marketing strategy with ProQuest? I've got to be honest with you, boy, if there's any place where we can make a quantum leap, it's right here with our ProQuest system. And then we took a look at the three pillars of lead generation last coaching session, and we're not going to drill down on that. You have a diagram there in your outline materials. Take a look at the three pillars of lead generation: referrals and repeats, marketing, and prospecting. Okay, so our new bullet point for today, where we're going to start under step five, is ProQuest in the mix. ProQuest in the mix. ProQuest in the mix. All right. So I just made a statement intentionally that if there's any place that we can make a quantum leap, it's with our ProQuest system. And I know that you guys probably get really tired of me harping away at this, but you know, ladies and gents, I've got to tell you, this to me is the most underutilized asset in our real estate practices. When we look at the opportunity inherent in our ProQuest system, and we look at the actual lead conversion stats that many of us are getting or not getting, as the case may be, it's a travesty. I mean, it really is. I looked at some stats recently for another team, right, and with their ProQuest system, and they were getting calls. I think I mentioned this last coaching call. They're getting the calls. They're getting 50, 60, 70 calls on average a month. I would say that the mean number is probably in the wheelhouse of 60. That's a lot of opportunity to come in each month. And I think that like 47 or 48 people on average direct connect. And these are unique calls. These are not people who dial in, several times. These are unique calls, roughly 60 a month. About 47, 48 of these people are direct connecting. I'm going from memory, but I promise you I'm close. Well, this particular team, when I look at the ProQuest reports, fully 65, 70% of those calls are not being answered when they come in. In other words, when the caller direct connects, nobody answers the phone. It goes to voicemail. That's a lot, 60, 70% of the time. And then 30% of the time that the phone is answered, the conversations are lasting on average maybe 30, 45 seconds on average. There's a couple in there, 5 minutes, 6 minutes, which is good. But only a couple, literally two. Two of the calls lasted more than 5 minutes. So here's the deal, guys. If we're not going to intercept, the equation should be reversed, first of all. We should be intercepting 60, 70% of these calls at Jump Street versus 30%. And what I will tell you is that I know that it's impossible to be 100%. That's not going to happen. Nobody's going to answer 100% of the calls. I don't care who you are. But you should have 100% compliance, meaning if you can't answer the call, 100% of the time you try to get back to that caller. That I will tell you. There's no way to measure that. I mean, our ProQuest system isn't, our ProQuest reports aren't going to tell us whether or not we called people back. I mean, that's kind of the honor system. But at the end of the day here, we should have, first and foremost, the intention and the commitment to answer, I'm going to say 70% of the calls when they come in. When somebody hits that, direct connect, that mobile voice routing, technology kicks in and they say, yes to whatever, would you like current pricing on this property? Say yes now. Would you like a copy of this free report? Say yes now. Would you like information on such and such? Say yes now. And that lead, not yet a prospect, still a lead, direct connects with our phone or whomever is answering the phone. We need to have a standard of 70%. 70% of the time. If it's 30%, like I just described, we're not even in the game. We're not even close. We're not even in the stadium. So we've got to start at the beginning, right? And the beginning is what? Making this commitment that we're going to intercept these calls at Jump Street, the vast majority of them. And then we've got to make a commitment that we're going to have the sales skills necessary to extend these conversations, find pain, make a connection, qualify, and get an upfront contract. As I was preparing for my day this morning at dark, the thing that occurred to me is that we really don't, most of us anyway, have a lead generation problem with our real estate practices. Some of us do. Some of us, in fairness, are in marketplaces where listing inventory is low and it's, very, very competitive environment for listings. I get that. But for the most part, we as a group do not have a lead generation challenge. We have a lead conversion challenge. And the propensity, to use a fancy word, is for us, when we're not at the levels we want to be, is to go out and add another pillar of lead generation. Well, I need to do, to hit my goals, I need to find, 18 more sides next year. So I'm going to run out and I'm going to add another pillar of lead generation. I'm going to do such and such. Why isn't our initial response to that kind of increase, why isn't it, hey, man, if I just work diligently on ProQuest, and I make the commitments there, right? I make a commitment to making that system run, and I'm going to do business from it. Versus going out and creating another pillar of lead generation, which is totally unnecessary. You've got all the leads you need. You just need to convert them. I almost find myself wondering, or found myself wondering this morning, if this is the low-hanging fruit syndrome. Hey, if I have enough pillars of lead generation, there's going to be more and more low-hanging fruit, so I don't really have to work hard at any given one of them. That's crazy thinking, guys. Let's make a commitment to get it work. ProQuest in the mix. Yeah, big time in the mix. Big time. And the other piece of this, you know, the next bullet point here is when we go out there and add other pillars of lead generation, typically we're spending money. Typically we're spending money, and a lot of it. You know, pound for pound, the ProQuest system is the best fighter on the planet. You know, when we look at what we pay for that system versus what it can yield in the way of results, it's a no-brainer. But it's chop wood and carry water. Learning the sales skills and upping your conversion rates with ProQuest. And I made the comment last coaching session, my gosh, why would we be just happy or complacent is probably a better word, with a handful of transactions, three or four from our ProQuest system. Why would you ever be complacent with that? Why would you ever have this mindset as, oh, gee whiz, you know, for what I pay for, boy, it more than pays for itself. It's, you know, it's a good little ROI. I get three or four deals from it every year. Are you kidding me? Really? That's how you think about it? How about 15, 20, 24 sides from your ProQuest system? How about that kind of thinking? You know, in this whole wheelhouse of lead conversion, I've got down on the outline systems, and it should be skills, right? Skills. Because we got the system. We've got the lead generation system. We got the lead generation systems. What we need are the skill sets to convert them. So just a word about non-relationship-based business. It shouldn't surprise me anymore, but I have the same conversations with people I coach over and over again, especially the team leaders. And the conversations all kind of go like this. Well, you guys are really doing a great job at converting leads that are relationship-based, you know, referrals and repeats. You're doing a pretty good job, you know, in the social proof area. But with this non-relationship-based business, not so much. Not so much. I mean, your conversion rates are horrible, but your lead generation is terrific, right? You're generating a terrific number of leads from non-relationship-based business, high-quality ones too. ProQuest business is high-quality business, guys. Why? You get to have a conversation with somebody at Jump Street. It's not like an internet lead that you're trying to, you know, convert via email much of the time or texting or whatever else they're teaching these days to convert these internet leads that have a 4% conversion rate on a good day. Most people are two out of 100 leads get converted to prospects, get converted to commission checks, 2 out of 100. Are you kidding me? Man, that's a tough game to play. Why? Well, we got to get to have a conversation with them first, and that's really like 9/10 of the battle. You know, our ProQuest system has solved that. But non-relationship-based business, no matter how high quality the lead is business that is more difficult, far more difficult to convert than relationship-based business. I know what you're thinking. Tell me something I don't know, John. But because it is far more difficult to convert, it requires a fairly good set of skills to convert it. And as an industry, boy, this whole area of sales skills has gone to hell in a handbasket. It really has. So this final bullet point is a segue into the database section of our business plan. And that's the goose that lays the golden eggs. The goose that lays the golden eggs is our referral and repeat pillar of lead generation. And this is why this area deserves a special place in our business plan, its own separate place. Our referral and repeat system is the goose that lays the golden eggs. It should be 50 to 60% of our business, right? And so when we look at this next section of our business plan, our database, right, I want you to all view it as being alive and vital, right? Our database is a database of people, a database of relationships. It is, quite frankly, vital and alive. And I always use the metaphor that the referral and repeat system is the goose that lays the golden egg, and our database is where that goose lives. And for many of us, our database is either a junkyard, a graveyard, or a palace, right? It's a junkyard or a graveyard or a palace, meaning what? Well, at the end of the day, if it's a junkyard, it means that there's no organization. There's people in there that shouldn't be in there. There's people that aren't in there that should be in there. There's incomplete contact information. It's just a mess, right? And so we take this magnificent goose that lays the golden egg and we put him in a crap house, right? We put him in a junkyard and say, you live there. That's crazy. Graveyard. Well, for many of us, we don't really have a database at all, do we? We've never sat and taken the time and the energy required to put a solid database together. So we take our goose who lays our golden eggs and we say, go live in a graveyard. Not a good plan. We want this database of relationships to be a palace. We want it to be well organized, well oiled, complete. We want it to always be changing and shifting, and we want to be on top of it. We want to say to our goose that lays the golden eggs, look, you've got a beautiful palace here to live in, right? And I'm going to feed you, and I'm going to feed you high quality food, and we're going to make you nice and fat, like a goose should be, so you can lay lots of those golden eggs. So as part of your business plan, guys, if you have a junkyard, you need to clean it up. If you have a graveyard, you need to resurrect it. You need to make it come alive. And if you're one of the few that has a palace, congratulations, because that's where your goose lives. Now, here's a piece of counsel that I'll give you from my own experience. And that is this whole idea of each year at this time when you're doing your business plan, the idea of adding, deleting, and maintaining. Adding, deleting, and maintaining. We need to be adding people to our database all the time. We need to be infusing it with new blood. Most notably, people with whom we've done business this year. And I can't tell you how many times people fail because they're busy, you know, to add those people who they've done business with to their database and put them in the proper category. By the way, if you want a complete turnkey system for referrals and repeats, go on to our training portal. Go into the ProQuest training portal and listen to those calls on referrals and repeats. I think we did them, I don't know, a couple years ago. But basically what I do on those calls is lay out exactly what I did to drive massive referral business into my wheelhouse every year. I give you the exact system that I used. Because you don't do massive referrals and repeats by relying on word of mouth, right? You got to have a system in play. But at this time of year, when it comes to your database, when it comes to the goose's house, we should be adding people. We should be going through there and deleting people who don't belong in there or who don't belong in there anymore. And we need to make a commitment to maintain that database going forward. And what I started to say was one of the things that I'll share with you is that I had the intention, I had a goal of adding two solid people to my database every single week, eight a month. So that's roughly adding 100 people over the course of a year. Well, high quality people, what does that mean? People who could potentially send me a referral. Now, maybe that's a lot for you, right? Maybe for you it's one a week. But if you really put your mind to it, you can increase the population of your database in many ways. Joining a referral group is one of those ways. I mean, joining a referral group, I increased my database by about 40 people almost overnight. High-quality people, because they were part of my referral group. You can piggyback on the databases of other service providers, like your mortgage lender, like your insurance provider, like your title company. You can increase it by piggybacking on their database, getting them to endorse you. But your database is absolutely critical to your success in the referral and repeat pillar, which is, again, you know, should be 50 to 60% of your business, for crying out loud. So let's make sure that we're devoting a section in our business plan solely to this area. So your contact management system is also, a part of this whole thing. And we should talk about that a little bit here in step six under database. And your contact management system, your CRM, you know, the software you use, is how we're going to care for and feed our goose, right? How we're going to care for and feed our goose. There's no way that we can do a good job here without good contact management software. And look, there are a lot of choices out there. I know. There are a ton of choices out there. You know, if I'm going to be really honest, and I'm not endorsing any single one of them, but probably, you know, the most popular, the one used by most agents, is Top Producer. But there are others. There are certainly other, you know, other companies that provide a CRM, you know, a contact management system for us that isn't going to break the bank. And having a contact management system isn't optional, guys. If you want, again, if you want to take care of business in this wheelhouse, if you want to feed the goose, you've got to put a plan together how that's going to happen, and you have to have software that enables you and helps you to launch that plan. I mean, you're going to do this manually during the course of the year? No way. No way, especially when you get busy. So if you in this area of the goose that lays the golden egg, our database of relationships, if you haven't done so, I would enthusiastically encourage you to get this piece dialed in for next year. It's going to take you, if you're solo without an agent, or I'm sorry, if you're a solo agent without an assistant, yeah, it's going to take some time and energy. You're going to have to take the time. And this time of year is when we typically have the most time to do stuff like that. You can't be doing this in April, May, June, July, depending when your spring market starts here in the South. March through July 4th is the spring market. You don't have time to do this then. You got to do it now. And you've got to discipline yourself and take the time it takes to do it. If you've got an assistant, hallelujah. You can delegate that task to him or her, you know, that project to him or her. But it's got to be done. It's got to be done. You cannot, under any law circumstances, expect fabulous results in this area if you're not willing to put a system together and take the time to make it a legitimate system. It's never going to happen. And I'd rather you not delude yourselves, you know, and be in la la land. It takes time. It takes time. Okay, section 7 of your binder, team building. Now, let's just be really clear here. If you're a solo agent, you know, if you're flying through this game, you know, and by yourself and you don't have an assistant, are you ready? The minute that you hire your first assistant, even if it's part-time, you have graduated from solo agent to a team. Yes, indeed, you have. You know, a team begins with two people. But here is the deal, guys. I see this all the time. And I'm kind of wringing my hands here as I'm contemplating what I'm about to say, because it's painful. So many times I see agents in this business, they want to build a team, right? They want to go out and build a team. And so they go out and hire all these buyer agents. I was talking to a client on Monday this week, and he was telling me about this woman in his marketplace who has a team of five people, right, on the team, which includes her, right? So it's her and four other people, her, an administrative assistant, and three buyer agents. And as a team, they're doing 40 transaction sides a year. So we've got three licensed agents on the front line, right? Each doing what? A dozen or so deals? That is nuts. That's not a team. That's an arrangement. Now, and I don't know what this woman is doing. I don't know who she is. I don't even know her name. But it's not uncommon. So we've got five people on the team, right, doing 40 sides a year. That is crazy. I mean, crazy. I just got a question from Jeffrey Adams, what binder. So Jeffrey, so the deal here with your business plan is you want to go to Staples or Office Max. You want to buy an 1.5 3-ring binder, and then you want to buy an Avery page divider for 8 sections. So Avery sells, you know, binder dividers, and you want it to be in 8 sections, and you want to label it. You want to label those 8 sections per the handout in your materials. So there's 8 sections to your business plan. So the binder I'm referring to is the 3-ring binder that you buy at Staples. It's not anything fancy. Okay, so back to this whole area of team building. Okay, your most valuable asset, ladies and gentlemen, and here's the deal. This asset, your most valuable asset, has always been your most valuable asset. It's your most valuable asset right here today on this coaching call, and it will be your most valuable asset going forward, and that is your own personal production. And until and unless your own personal production is at its max, and for most agents, I mean, if I had to quantify it, this is a debatable area, I would tell you it's somewhere between 40 and 60 transaction sides. So most agents can, you know, plateau out at about 40 to 60 transaction sides with an assistant, is what I'll tell you. So if you have your first admin, you know, assistant, and you're in the wheelhouse of 40 to 60 sides, it may at that point in time be timed to be thinking about hiring another agent onto the team. But not until then, not until your own personal production is maxed out. I'm sorry, you've got no business doing that. And I see people do it all the time, and it seldom, if ever, works out. And if it works out relationally, people are getting along, nobody's making any money. Least of all, the team leader. And I know that there are people in this business that will categorically disagree with me. Most of them are broker owners or people who, you know, have a stake in a particular franchise, and the game is populate the company with bodies, right? Just get butts in seats, you know. And so, you know, they'll disagree with me, quite frankly, because they have a different agenda than you and I do. But I would tell you respectfully, get the idea out of your head that you have any business building a team until your own personal production is at a max. Then you can think about a team member. You should always be hiring an admin first, not a team agent. Always an admin first. Never a team agent. And look, I'll debate anybody, anytime, anywhere on this issue. So this first hire that you want to make is somebody who's going to act as your all-around admin person. Now, my personal feeling is if you look at the admin department, there's three legs of the stool back there. The butcher, the baker, the candlestick maker. Just joking. See if you guys are awake. The three stools in admin are closing or transaction coordinator, listing coordinator, and marketing coordinator. Generally, they're the three legs of the stool in admin. Transaction or closing coordinator, listing coordinator, marketing coordinator. My personal feeling, my personal experience is you want to outsource the closing coordinator duties to preferably another company. There are lots of companies that have sprung up all over the United States. And they're usually, you know, not usually, but oftentimes started by somebody who has a real estate license that probably wasn't cut out for the sales game, but are good with details. And they do closing coordinator duties on a per transaction basis. You see, that leg of the stool really doesn't generate any revenue for you at all. That revenue has already been generated. You've already earned the commission. And while this is a very important function, it's not one that I believe you want to keep in-house. If you know, there are clients that I work with that have hired their own transaction coordinator. That person works in-house. I think that that's fine. But the point here is that's the first piece of admin that, in my experience, needs to go. You need to get it off of your plate and onto somebody else's plate. Plus, it takes a ton of time. It takes a ton of acumen for detail work, neither of which we have to give. We don't have the time and the natural giftedness for detail work that's required for this position. Get it off your plate. Get it off your plate. And again, the best case scenario is to hire a company that's already in business that's providing settlement services for real estate agents on a per transaction basis. You don't want payroll here if you can avoid it. You want a 1099. Or if the company that provides the services is incorporated, you don't even have to issue a 1099. But this way, you're going to avoid
you know, payroll taxes, et cetera, and just, you know, my feeling is you just have a title company at settlement, cut the check directly to the settlement services company. And by the way, you want to legitimately and legally, is the disclaimer, in your state, pass the cost of that closing coordinator on to the buyers and sellers. So this way, you're not really, you know, missing anything in the way of revenue, and you kind of got a free employee there. Maybe that's something you should be putting in your business plan this year, that, hey, man, I'm finally going to offboard, outsource this closing coordinator job. It's killing me. I asked a really high producer, a team leader, about 2 months ago. I said, how much time do you spend with closing coordinator activities in a given day? What percentage of your day is in there? And she said, probably about 35, 40%. Oh, my gosh. Over a third of her day, she's getting sucked down that rabbit hole. Are you kidding me? Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. Now, once you've outsourced that chair, the closing coordinator chair, remember, guys, what we're talking about here is hiring somebody to do this on a per transaction basis, passing that cost legitimately and legally on to the consumer, you know, the buyers and sellers, and being done. You're done with that position. It's filled. The only thing that you would do, by the way, is negotiate home inspection items. And then that person in that chair would execute or get done whenever you negotiate it. But now we've got these two vacancies to fill. called the listening coordinator and the marketing coordinator. You could also call the marketing coordinator the lead generation and lead conversion specialist, right? System specialist. I don't care what you call it. But typically, once you have offboarded, outsourced the closing coordinator position, you can fill this position with one person who's going to wear both those hats, the right person. We'll wear your listing coordinator hat and your marketing coordinator hat. And for many of us can get those two jobs done in heavy, what I call heavy part-time, maybe 30 hours a week, something like that. Provided, again, we've off-boarded or outsourced the closing coordinator duties. Well, when do you know it's time to hire that person? Financially. Well, we know literally when it's time to hire that person when we're just buried, right, with this stuff. Because we're the chief cook and bottle washer. But financially, here's a formula that I found has worked out really well for anyone who's used it. You hire this person when you have 4 months worth of run rate, RUN rate, run rate. If you don't know what that is, go back and listen to some earlier coaching calls. But 4 months of run rate means that you've got enough in the way of revenue on hand and revenue coming in that you can pay your bills for 4 months. And then we want to add to those, you know, the monthly expenses, the amount it would cost us to make this hire. So let's just say for the sake of argument that we need, you know, $6,000 a month to pay our business expenses, our personal expenses, and this person that we're going to hire, the salary we're going to pay him or her is included in that $6,000 a month. We need $6,000 a month. Well, until we have $24,000 between our reserves and what's in the pending drawer, we shouldn't be hiring somebody. So at least 4 months of run rate to make the hire. So we know we can pay this person for 4 months if we never sold another transaction. Look, what I'll tell you is if we hire the right person, he or she is going to more than justify their compensation and get us to the point where we're going to have 6, 8, 9 months of run rate. So that's how we know when it's time to hire the person. We do not want to lead with expenses. Oh, gee whiz, I'll hire the person and we'll figure out, you know, how to pay them going forward. No, that's stupid. Know that you can pay them for at least 4 months and then hire them. And by the way, if you hire somebody just like you, personality-wise, you're asking for serious trouble. We don't want you, right? We want the polar opposite of you. We want somebody who's going to, you know, fill gaps. You know, where you're weak, they're going to be strong. Typically, salespeople make the worst admin people. If we hire somebody for admin who's got a salesperson's personality, you're going to live to regret it. You know, oftentimes we want to make the hire to somebody who's like us because they're like us. You know, they're usually outgoing people. Oh my gosh, they're terrific. They'll get along well with my clients. They're just like me. We hit it off beautifully, right? I hear that all the time. Then we make that hire and it's like a disaster. You know, here's the paradox, guys. The people that you hire for this position who are not like you oftentimes are really, really not like you at all. They're not outgoing, gregarious people. They're kind of quiet and reserved, and they're good listeners. You know, we're as a group, we're not quiet or reserved, and my experience is we're not very good listeners. And so it's kind of counterintuitive, right? Oh my gosh, you know, this person came in and I interviewed her and she was kind of flat. Well, these personalities are kind of flat. There's not a lot of affect. There's not a lot of outward emotion showed. So you got to be vigilant about who you hire. Am I responsible for all of it? Yes. Any other questions? You know, our church... I love our church. I'm moving from South Carolina to Florida, and I'm going to really miss my church. And our pastor is wonderful, and he always has a great message every week. And he gave a series of talks over the past handful of weeks on leadership, right? And he was talking about the rules of leadership, and one of the rules of leadership is everything is your fault. Everything that happens is your fault, period. If you're in a leadership position, the buck stops with you. And we throw around this term team leader, right? Team leader. But yeah, you are responsible for all of it if you are a team leader. It's all your fault. It's all your responsibility. If you can't live with that, then I would respectfully suggest that you not start a team. Leadership is a burden. It's not easy. One of the best ways we can hire people is using the DISC and values assessments. You can get them for free on the Anthony Robbins, Tony Robbins website. But just a quick thought here when you hire people. Without the DISC and values assessments and a resume, why would you ever waste time for an interview? And if you're not well-versed with DISC and values assessments, you need to get some training in that area. Because what the DISC and values assessments are going to do are going to give you a blueprint for how this candidate for the admin position is wired. And if he or she isn't wired for the job, why would you ever spend 1 minute interviewing the person? So what I've seen a lot of agents do is they'll put an ad in the paper, they'll have the people respond, you'll have a short conversation with them on the phone, no resume, people come in to interview for the job, they conduct the interview, and then if they do the DISC at all, they do it after the fact, if they spend all this time and energy doing all of this stuff that they shouldn't have been doing, right? No. When you're ready to make this hire, you put an ad in the paper or Craigslist, Indeed.com, whatever. You ask them to send their resume to your email. When you get the resumes, you pick out the top two or three. You go back to those candidates and say, I need you to go online and take these assessments. You look over the assessments and you only interview those people who have assessments that indicate that they have the acumen, right? The natural talent and ability to do the job. Look, I'm going to be blunt again. You're nuts if you don't do it that way. You're going to waste so much time and energy. You're going to make so many bad hires that you're going to conclude that there's no good people out there. I've heard that. There's no good people out there. It's like all the leads are bad, right? So you want to be very deliberate in your hiring process. Hire slowly, fire quickly. The other thing that I will tell you is you guys need to be really careful. If you have it in your business plan to hire somebody this year, your closing coordinator position, if you set the table correctly, you can pay that person $10.99. If they're in-house, you got to be careful. Anybody who's in-house that works for you, that is in doing admin duties, right? That are doing admin position duties, the probability is pretty close to 100% that you cannot put them on a 1099 type arrangement. Because if you do and the IRS audits you, you're going to be in trouble. I don't think it's tax fraud or tax evasion. But you're going to have to pay all kinds of back employment taxes and penalties and interest and everything else. It's just not worth it. And I know why you all do it, so that you save on employment taxes. But you technically cannot do it. If somebody's in an admin position, and again, the exception to the rule is if somebody's in the closing coordinator chair and they're a company and you pay the company for closing coordinator duties, yeah, you can pay them on a 1099 basis if they're not in your, if they work independently off on their own. But when you all try to 1099 somebody who's really an employee, you're looking for trouble. Seriously, you don't want that kind of trouble, guys. This business is tough enough without creating situations that you're going to fall down a rabbit hole, especially with the Internal Revenue. Be careful. Now, one more general rule of thumb. general rule of thumb. You always want to have a written contract with a 1099 subcontractor. So if you hire a team agent, you always, always want a contract with that individual. With employees, you never want to have a contract. Never. So 1099 agent on the team, always a written contract. Employee, never. Never a contract. Ever. You get yourself into a lot of hot water later on if you violate that one. And I don't have the time to go into it right now, nor am I an expert. I just know that the repercussions of doing that are pretty serious. Okay, the eighth and final part of our business plan, the eighth and final step, is complete the pipeline. This is a typo. It should say 2017 pipeline. It says 2013 pipeline. Say 2017 pipeline. At least it says it on mine. I think Gary may have caught that one and corrected it on yours. I think he did. Gary's always correcting my typos. So what we want to do is refer to our last two coaching sessions, actually, where we talked about this whole idea of identifying 60 to 70% of your business by February, right? You know, this business runs in cycles. They're just like life. There's a season for everything, guys. Right now, we're heading into the holiday season, but for us, it's the lead generation season, right? It's the lead generation season. You know, between November 1st, maybe even October 1st, and the end of February, I always used to use Valentine's Day as a target because it was easy to remember. We want to be stockpiling solid prospects, identifying solid prospects for our year ahead. And I always shot for 70, you know, 70% formula. So if I personally wanted to do, let's say, 60 listings, you know, I wanted to identify 42 of those prospects by February, by Valentine's Day. You know, January 15th, to be honest with you, is when when the real estate world comes awake. You know, the real estate world is about to go to sleep, ladies and gentlemen, just so you know. I'm not taking a shot at it. I'm just making an observation over many, many years. So come Thanksgiving, right, the Wednesday before Thanksgiving, this whole industry falls asleep and it doesn't wake up till January 15th. That's not how you want to be. You don't want to hibernate. Absolutely, you do not want to hibernate. And the temptation is to do that. The pull is to hibernate. And then it's like January 15th comes around and everybody's like, oh my God, I just woke up from my hibernation. I better get busy. Springtime is just around the corner. And they've wasted effectively half of November, all of December, and half of January, 2 months. I think I said this last coaching session. Here's the deal. Take Thanksgiving off. Take off Wednesday of Thanksgiving week if you want. Take those days off. Enjoy your family. Enjoy your Thanksgiving dinner. Eat too much. Watch football games. Take a nap. Go for a walk. Go see your family. You know, travel. Do whatever. Take those days off and be unplugged. The rest of the world is unplugged. Thanksgiving weekend, by and large, is a weekend that you can take off and not lose much of anything in the way of business. Take the week off between December 24th and January 1st. Same deal. Most of the world, the vast majority of people are unplugged. They're engaged in holidays. The rest of the time you work. Doing what? Identifying high probability prospects for your pipeline. Look, I was a lunatic, 70%. You could probably get away with 60%. By Valentine's Day, get it done. Do not go to sleep. The draw that to pull you into that hibernation mode is going to be huge. You've got to fight it. Like I said, take your time off, but the rest of the time you work. So Jeffrey's asking a question, should we have an employee handbook? Yeah, I think that that's fine. I think an employee handbook is absolutely fine. You know, my independent contractor agreement, you know, stated the duties to be performed by the independent contractor. But the point is, you don't want to have an employment contract, generally speaking, with an employee. It can come back to bite you on the bottom. All right, so listen, let's talk about some conclusions here, and we'll see if we can get you out of here just a little early today. Jeffrey just made a comment. Gusto.com online payroll, awesome and cheap. So if anybody of you are looking for a payroll service, it looks like Gusto.com provides payroll services. Okay, so some conclusions here. Your business plan is a never one and done. It's something that you want to review on a regular basis. You want to tweak it. You want it to be flexible. It's a guideline, right? And things change. Here's a great example. So maybe you decide in March that you want to initiate a new lead generation program. Well, let's not just do it willy-nilly. Let's incorporate it into our plan. But overall, I've got to tell you, that's probably, in most cases, a bad idea. I've seen so many agents get into trouble because they don't have a business plan and they're off chasing the newest shiny object. And they end up spending enormous amounts of time, energy, and money on stuff that doesn't pan out. So stick with the map. Stick with the plan. And here's what I'll tell you guys. Again, this stuff takes time. Creating a business plan is going to take some time. I just made mention of the fact that this whole area of database, you know, and your database of relationships, I think that one of the reasons that agents don't go after that area with vigor is because they know it's going to take a tremendous amount of time and energy. But the good news is, once you do it, it's just a matter of maintenance from there. But this is a career-long skill set, guys. If you stick with this basic plan, it'll work for you. Listen, I was probably considered, you know, quote-unquote, a mega agent. I did, you know, a lot of business. I did a lot of production. And the business plan that I've given you here over these past handful of coaching sessions, it's the identical one that I used. I didn't reinvent the wheel. I didn't read this in a book. I used this same basic plan for years. And it worked really well for me. Can you embellish it? Sure. Can you tweak it? Yeah. Can you do some things to make it your own? Absolutely. We're not going to argue over strategy here. But we are going to always stick with principle. And the principle is, you need a simple, straightforward plan for your business in the year ahead. And this is a simple, straightforward plan. So I want to wish everybody in the States a happy Thanksgiving. We're going to reconvene here the first Tuesday in December because December has a pretty long holiday season, so we're not going to be doing any coaching sessions at the end of December, obviously. So next month, December's theme, in keeping with everything that I said today, is lead generation, referrals, repeats, and social proof, right? We're going to be talking about how we should be setting the table to get those prospects identified for the coming year ahead. While everybody else is hibernating, what are we doing? We're lead generating. We're lead converting. We're putting prospects, high quality prospects, into our prospect pipeline. And we're going to get 60% of them at least into the bullseye by Valentine's Day, no later than the end of February. So we will see you the first Tuesday in December. Happy Thanksgiving, one and all. Enjoy yourselves. Travel safely. Don't drink and drive. And oh, as always, get out there, chop wood, carry water, and do it like you mean it. God bless you.